All right. There's so much to talk about this morning because in the last 2-3 weeks, the US has been making a lot of noise and in all directions. I saw that J.D. Vance was at the Munich Security Conference, basically told the Europeans that they are either going to actually toe the line with free speech or they're going to have a very complicated relationship with America. It's not just South Africa who've been in the firing line. And when I say the firing line, basically just being held accountable for what they've been doing. And by they, I mean the government. The US has noticed a couple of things that previous administrations have just pretended not to notice. And suddenly it's made our Department of International Relations and Cooperation very, very nervous. It's also made people in the ANC extremely angry for some reason. We'll talk about that too. And there are funny things going on. Because just yesterday, a letter was released by Congress, and maybe our guest can tell us a little bit about that, because I skimmed through it, but I can't give you any real insights. Our guest is Anas van Sail. He's the head of public relations at AfriForum. For some reason, people think AfriForum is a controversial organization, even though it's got 300 and something thousand members. You can't be some underground... dangerous organization with more than 300,000 members. That's a lot of people. That's not someone who's trying to, that's not an organization that's trying to hide the ball. But you've had a tough couple of days.
Well, I had a tough couple of weeks. I mean, the work hasn't stopped. These things are impossible to predict, especially with Donald Trump. So I don't know, tomorrow he might be dropping another big bombshell and then the work starts all over again. But at least when I sneeze, I can close my eyes for a little bit the past 2 weeks.
But Ernst, people will say that you, why would you ever take a job like this? But you love it. Mm.
Everyone has their job where they fit in, where they feel they, in Afrikaans, you'd say roepingswerk, you're pursuing your calling. And then you don't really get tired. You get physically tired sometimes, but at the same time, you don't get spiritually tired. You don't like get exhausted. You feel like, I can't go to work today. But it gives me energy dispelling lies, fighting.
Okay, so what kind of lies? David, what kind of lies are you tired of hearing about AfriForum? Because I must be honest with you, I didn't know a lot about AfriForum until probably about 3 years ago. I knew that you guys were a self-funded, community-based organization. You built things, you started things, you helped people, you were involved in court cases, communities, Afrikaans rights stuff. But I didn't know a huge amount about you. What are the main lies that you have to correct about AfriForum?
Well, you know, when your teacher used to tell you in primary school, if I wake you up at 3 a.m. in the morning, you should be able to answer this question in regards to math or whatever. When it comes to what does AfriForum do, you can wake me up at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Okay, so I'll be able to tell you. Go.
So AfriForum is the largest civil rights and community-based solutions organization on the African continent, probably in the Southern Hemisphere, based on our membership numbers. We haven't been able to find another.
Am I right about 300,000?
Between 300 and 315,000 in that range, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So when it comes to specifically our membership base, they are all donating members. That's what makes what we do possible. We don't get money from the state. We don't get money from billionaires or like some big benefactor or whatever, or US aid. We get all our money from our members. And that means that it's this massive decentralized funding model where it's not just one guy or a handful of people that can pull the plug if you do something that they don't like, where your funders can just tell you, you need to go into this direction, otherwise you lose like 50 million rand. Like, no, where our money comes from is all dependent on whether our members feel we are representing them adequately and whether we're fighting a good fight. So that's the first thing. The second thing is AfriForum is part of a larger network. So we're part of the solidarity movement. And there's a whole just topic on its own, what all the different components and parts of the solidarity movement. So the solidarity movement, in short, is an organization or a network of 50 plus institutions and organizations, all specializing in a certain thing, particularly to ensure a common goal. The common goal being, firstly, to ensure a prosperous and safe future for Afrikaners and the Afrikaner culture at the southern tip of Africa, but also to ensure stability in South Africa. I mean, a lot of the things that we do as the solidarity movement have a massive ripple positive effect towards the outside. Like, for example, AfriForum filling potholes. When we fill thousands of potholes in a main street in a town. Those potholes don't discriminate. They don't just ask everyone that drives over them, are you an AfriForum member? Oh, no. You're not. Opens up, swallows the car.
Of course. It's good for everybody. God bless you for filling potholes. That's a real scourge.
It's like one of the small things that we do. But I mean, on the other end, AfriForum has over 170 branches all across the country, and those branches do everything from filling potholes, planting trees, maintaining infrastructure, solving all the problems unique to wherever they are situated, and serving the community.
Can anyone join?
Yeah, unlike the South African government, we don't ask your identity or your race when you apply.
I mean, if I were an old black lady in, you know, Tembisa, I can go and join AfriForum.
Yeah. You just have to understand that AfriForum is a Afrikaans Christian organization, has a very particular character when it comes to what our goals are, how we operate, and what our priorities are. So, for example, AfriForum won't compromise on the Afrikaans part. We will, for example, do all our primary communication in Afrikaans. Our whole website translates into English. There's a nice button on the top where you click and everything translates.
Okay.
But a lot of our SMSs and communication to our members, our newsletter, that will be in Afrikaans. That's fine with you. If you want to support a cause like AfriForum, we're not going to tell you you're not allowed to. But at the same time, for example,
well, we as taxpayers are paying for the Zulu King, and he does all his communication in Zulu. Yeah. So I don't have a problem with that.
But I mean, on the point of the branches, those branches serve the communities where they're situated. We don't randomly place them down. They are where the most AfriForum members are.
Right.
Because those members are funding our organization. They make what we do possible.
How much do the members guide what you do? I mean, are you able to survey them regularly? Are there meetings that are held? Because people want to know, and this is where I get back to like the criticisms and the biggest lies you have to deal with. Yeah. People seem obsessed with the idea that this is another locus of power. That this is like an alternative government waiting in the wings, that you guys are insurrectionist, you know, because a lot of this has become very popular conversation, especially post-Trump, where people who either don't like Trump or don't like America or were on the take suddenly are scurrying out of the blinding lights and into holes. And this is the best argument they can come up with. So how does the actual community work? Do people call you up in the Samtani in, you know, Venterstorp, call you up and go, "Ernst, ek is baie ongelukkig oor hierdie ding wat gebeur het," and then you have to pay attention to it because she's a paying member? I mean, how does it actually work on a day-to-day basis?
Well, on the first question of how does decision making work, well, when it comes to AfriForum, there's a very clear leadership structure. And it's a trust-based system in regards to we don't send out like every decision we make, we send out like a democratic vote to all of our members, and it's practically impossible.
And you're not political.
We're not
a political party, so you don't need like consensus or mandates or...
No. So we are not in that position where, for example, a lot of political parties send out internal polling constantly, see what the people want, we'll give them that. And then they become like wishy-washy. They don't really stand on anything because they only support the stances that their internal polling says they should support. AfriForum takes a different approach. We, from the outset, say we support X, Y, Z. If you support X, Y, Z, you can come support us. But we're not going to change those positions, even if the political wind changes direction. We will stick with our principles. We are not an organization determined by the zeitgeist in regards to, this position seems to be popular. I think we need to be pursuing that. I mean, I always tell my colleagues and my friends, if that's why I can't work for a political party, because then I'd be told on Monday morning,
now we're supporting trans rights.
This is your new position. You're going to go on an interview. You're going to have a nice personal story on why this has always been a deeply held belief.
It's just such nonsense. I hate that. And you can see with political spokespeople, they sometimes aren't sure what the party line is because it changes so regularly. And then they go on media interviews and they have no idea what to say because everything they say is going to be changed the next day. So you don't know what they really believe. You don't know what they stand for. Okay, so what are the other misconceptions people have about AfriForum? Because I don't understand why anyone would be intimidated by an organization that's grassroots up, that is funded by its members. I mean, if this happened in any other place, people would be thrilled with it. We would be I would be preaching from the rooftops about a community organization that came up out of, you know, some township and that was fixing potholes and looking after the people there, making it safer and all of that kind of thing. We'd all be extolling their virtues. And yet here, AfriForum is, for many people, deeply contentious and scary. Why do you think that is?
And yeah, and it's all volunteer-based. So it's not even that all these branches, we have over 11,000 volunteers doing all of this work, and they do it because they have to, not because they are paid to do it.
So it's the opposite of the political parties in some way, particularly.
And that's why I wanted to underline that they do it because they have to, because we live in a country where the state's capacity to do even basic things is deteriorating on a chronic level. And I mean, anyone that tells you otherwise should just stay in their like high security golf estate and not and pretend like they never go out into the rest of the country. But what is happening here and what AfriForum is actually just a symptom of is this massive void being created. A massive void being created by the government not being able to do basic things like keep the water running. My sympathies with the people in Joburg. I hear you guys are very, very much struggling there. And then also with security and crime and also electricity. So what happens when a power vacuum like that is created? Only two outcomes can happen. Either it's filled by the good guys or it's filled by the bad guys. The good guys are communities organizing. The bad guys are organized crime. Why do you think South Africa is at the same time one of the pioneering societies in regards to community-based solutions, but also one of the biggest organized crime hotspots in the world? Because there's this massive vacuum and both of those forces, the good guys and the bad guys, can see we have to fill this vacuum, otherwise the other side is going to. And that's what's happening currently.
I heard that one of the big misconceptions is that you have to have a two-tone khaki shirt to join. Is that true?
I do own a lot of two-tone khaki shirts, but it's not a prerequisite. No, it's not
and
a requirement.
And Felskoene?
I own a lot of Felskoene. Okay. But
again, you don't have to wear this stuff.
Yeah, right. You don't have to, but it helps. So when it comes to particularly AfriForum's approach, it is what we call state-proofing our communities. So state-proofing is on the other way. On the one side, you have state failure, where you have to either you do it or nobody's going to do it. On the other side is state-proofing. We are actively have to build up your defenses and immune system against a state that's malicious. And we're going to get into some of the ways in which the government is actively malicious, even though a lot of people for the past 2 weeks, a lot of people in the comment class seem to be suffering from like collective amnesia. For the past 15, 10 years, they've been talking about how untrustworthy, corrupt the ANC is. Yeah. And now for the past 2 weeks, like, no, you can trust them this time. It's the snake oil salesman that sells you the 20th failed product. You know, like the 21st product, that's one's going to work. And
yeah, these are the sort of people who also, if they were in an abusive relationship, would keep going back and keep going back. I do want to quickly refer to the important events of the last few weeks, because I think this is what a lot of people are most interested in. And it's one of the reasons that I haven't really had a discussion with you on AfriForum on the show before. Not because I'm not interested in what you're doing, but it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things happening in society, and we'll get to it eventually. But you've been very much front and center this week. Moondancer says, blaming AfriForum is absolutely ludicrous. You would swear Trump and Elon are idiots and can't see what this bill could end up doing.
The claims against AfriForum are, it's one of the strangest scenarios where the claims that are used to try and hurt AfriForum are actually very flattering. I mean,
but they think you're hugely influential. They think you've got like an office in the White House in the West Wing. Mapelo says here, and I think this is kind of where it all starts, right? So what did AfriForum say to America? Why are people blaming them? I'd like to hear what they said specifically. Ernst Roots, who's been on my show as well, he was in Washington a long while ago, and he was on Tucker Carlson's show, among other things. It's interesting for people to hear from you without any interruption now how all of that happened and what your relationships there are.
So over the years, AfriForum has had a multifaceted approach to solving problems in South Africa. You can't just that's how a military works as well. You can't just use infantry. You have a mechanized unit, you have a navy, you have an air force. And AfriForum's strategy is also multifaceted. So we have a lot of solutions, particularly focused on here in South Africa, how you solve things domestically. We have always prioritized solving problems domestically, trying to engage with the government, saying, hey, let's talk about these issues, solve them here, just give us the time of day. And for many years, we've been given the cold shoulder, door slammed in our face. You're a minority. You have to understand this is tyranny of the majority. I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. That's literally what they tell you from the government side. And when it comes to then, what do you do as a minority group then when your rights are being threatened? The government is actively telling you they're going to expropriate your property, the issue of farm murders doesn't happen. I mean, the president of South Africa goes to Bloomberg in New York, 2018, asked about farm murders, and he says, and I quote, "There are no murdering of farmers or white farmers in South Africa." What do you do in that scenario?
But there are people in this country. I mean, there's a ludicrous book that's been written by a pseudo-activist called Nechama Brody, that there are no farm murders going on.
That's the type of rhetoric that you have to deal with.
But so we've got to be very careful not to be sarcastic like we would with most subjects here. I mean, there are people in this country, huge numbers of people who are victims of violent crime, but there is a category that we should be paying attention to because it seems to be an extremely violent kind of
murder. It's the only form of violent crime that is firstly encouraged by many politicians, chants about it, saying that kill the Boer, kill the farmer. It's the only violent, I can't think of another violent crime.
I mean, if we're going to have hate speech at all, and that needs to be in it, right?
And secondly, it's the only violent crime phenomenon that I can think of that the president of the country has denied. Not in the sense of, oh, it's not as bad. No, it's not happening at all, as in nothing. What does the South African media do in response to that? Oh, of course, they're going to speak truth to power, right? No, they are. Pieter du Toit of News 24 writes a breathless article called What the President Meant to Say. Not fact-checking him, this is an egregious lie, he needs to retract immediately.
So why would people want to downplay farm murders?
Because it, in particular, is something that Afrikaners care very deeply about, and Afrikaners are a demographic group in this country that you are allowed to hate and are allowed to be bigoted and prejudiced towards. It's one of those... it's one of the things where when we talk about all this, you shouldn't be prejudiced, you shouldn't be stereotyping, you should be hating. But then the zeitgeist or the status quo gives people this one get out of jail free card. So like, if you want to just have a little bit of hate as a treat, you can hate the Afrikaners.
Those people, it's okay to hate.
Yeah. Because of
apartheid.
Because I mean, I've seen people argue, mainstream, not fringe people argue, like Afrikaners are just inherently morally flawed and therefore they're not capable of enlightened thoughts like we are. So they can just, you can just hate on them, you can just attack them. And they did, it's this dichotomy of the hateful rhetoric towards Afrikaners isn't happening. And if it is happening, it's a good thing.
We've gone down a track here because Mapelo's question was like, what did AfriForum say with regard to their relationship with America and influential people in America?
So, that's why I asked the rhetorical question. What do you do in that scenario? Well, if the South African government tells you, we don't want to listen to you, we're not going to give you the time of day, we're like, okay, fine, we'll go talk to someone who will listen. And then we go overseas to the United States. And in 2018, Ramaphosa goes to the parliament. He says, when Donald Trump makes that tweet about farm murders, Ramaphosa goes to parliament and says, come back, let's sort this out in South Africa. And again, AfriForum, being eternally patient, says, all right, here's a letter where we're open to seeing the president. That letter, we get a receipt of it being received. Nothing comes of it.
So it was all performative.
It's all performative. In 2025, we hear the same thing. Again, the government... The government says, oh, come back, let's sort it out. And this time we're just like, we've seen this movie before. Why does AfriForum have to go to get your attention?
I find it just appalling that our government treats so many people in this country as just tax slaves, effectively. Yeah. We don't want to hear from you. We don't care what your political point of view is. We're not particularly interested in trying to make your life better. You must just provide the tax money for us to squander and steal. And maybe we'll give you lip service.
Yeah. So just to answer that question, what does AfriForum tell our international allies and friends? So as I said, we've built up this network of friends and allies abroad because I mean, you need someone to be able to listen to what you have to say of a lot of people if the government in South Africa doesn't want to listen. So what did we tell them? Well, firstly, we told them that farm murders in South Africa are a serious issue. Mm-hmm. Not that it's a genocide. Nobody can find wherever AfriForum said that. It's just one of these myths out there that AfriForum calls farm murders a genocide. When asked, where does AfriForum say that? I'm like, no, we can't find that. We've had like 4, 5, or 6 newspapers that have had to post retractions and apologies for spreading that lie. So that's the one thing. We tell them about the severity and how serious farm murders are as an issue. Secondly, we highlight the anti-Afrikaner, anti-white, anti-minority rhetoric from high-profile politicians like Julius Malema, Andile from MK in Parliament. Even the president himself, his denialism about farm murders, we don't even have to dramatize it.
They
we just
it
show
themselves.
Them the clips.
They do it themselves.
We just show
they're
them
being
the clips.
Recorded and put on YouTube.
That's the other thing. And then, well, the Bella Act, that's another assault against Afrikaans education, where the government wants to have total control over education in this country, and particularly threatening Afrikaans education. And then fourthly, the other key issue, which is now the hot topic, is expropriation without compensation. What do we tell them? We don't tell them the government is now taking thousands of farms and it's already Zimbabwe-style confiscations happening. We tell them what the ANC tells us as citizens.
Right.
What does the ANC tell us as citizens? In 2018, the ANC announces they are going to try and amend the constitution to make expropriation without compensation possible, effectively abolishing private property rights. They try, they fail. They fail for the funniest reason. I don't think people even remember why they fail. A lot of opposition parties tried to claim it, and it's because we put up a good fight. No, it's because of leftist hubris. It's because the EFF didn't vote with the ANC in Parliament to give them the two-thirds majority because they thought they could give it even more. They thought they were so on top in the balance of forces they could get total state ownership of all property in this country. So they didn't vote with the ANC. So in the most strange twist of fate, private property rights were temporarily saved by the arrogance and hubris of the Marxist-Leninists. But so then what does the ANC do? Everyone celebrates private property rights are saved. AfriForum in 2021 says, because that's when the process to attempt to amend the constitution ended. AfriForum's message then was, these guys are going to come back. They're going to try again. This is not the end. A few weeks later, we're proven right. Ronald Lamola, then Minister of Justice, goes to the media. He says, this first attempt to make expropriation without compensation possible through amending the constitution has now failed. That's now over. We will now use other alternative avenues to make expropriation without compensation possible,
so
such
again,
as legislation.
They're not hiding the ball.
No. And the legislation he's talking about is the Expropriation Act.
So are these people, are they deliberately trying not to understand this because they know that the answer is plain for all to see? Deliberate ignorance. So is this what they're doing when they say, for example, AfriForum are running a campaign through their friends in America and Europe or wherever else to discredit our government? Our government is doing this to themselves. Oh. And all you have to do is look at what they say. Oh. Forget about what AfriForum says. Just look at what they say.
That's why what I'm saying, I can recite these quotes. 2023, Cyril Ramaphosa, president of South Africa, addresses ANC supporters and the ANC and says, we will pursue expropriation without compensation. And we will do this through the Expropriation Act, which enables null and zero rand compensation. That's very important because that's the other gaslighting that's been going on.
Yeah.
A lot of these experts in media have been saying, oh, but it's null compensation, it's not no compensation. I'm like,
the same fucking thing.
Okay, then you deserve to be paid null this month. If you believe that, you should be paid null and you'd be happy with
Guess
it.
Guess what's going to come in that that month's bank statement? Zero.
I told one of my friends, I think Afrikaans speakers see through this blatant propaganda so easily because zero in Afrikaans just literally means null, translates to null.
Yeah.
So when someone tells you, I'm going to give you null, I'm like, yeah, I know, that's zero. So, so President Ramaphosa, and then the last quote that also the most recent one, Deputy President Paul Mashatile, 2024, a journalist asks him, you guys are, he says, we're committed to expropriation without compensation through the Expropriation Act. Journalist asks him, what's the difference between no compensation and no compensation? Paul Mashatile says, It's the same thing. There you understand the same thing? So, it means we don't pay. That's literally his words. Like,
in other words, to everybody who has been trying to paint you guys as some sort of treasonous organization that is entreating a foreign power to enter into our domestic politics and in some way threaten our sovereignty, I say just listen to the government themselves. Don't worry about AfriForum so much.
Yeah.
Scapegoating.
Yeah.
And we know what happens. Basically, I think for the same reasons AfriForum exists, there has been scapegoating going on.
But I always encourage people.
The kind of scapegoating people don't want to talk about.
I always encourage people, when it comes to what AfriForum says, there's two things. On the one side, there's a very nice rule of thumb you should be using when you read any headline that says AfriForum says.
Mm-hmm.
Is this article directly quoting AfriForum? Or is this headline someone's interpretation of what AfriForum is saying? And the other thing that's important is I always encourage people, don't just believe what we say. Research what we say. Every single claim that I make, go check it. Go meticulously go look up every single thing that I claim, and every single time you'll find that it's the truth. I mean, a lot of people claim that AfriForum is spreading in quote-unquote misinformation, like misinformation is some magic word that silences your opponents. And then my simple question is, what misinformation?
Yeah, but these are the same people who said that if you questioned any of the government officials during 2020's COVID pandemic, that you were spreading misinformation. Right. They're those people.
There's never substance. These all
people,
vibes.
These people can be reliably ignored. So, okay, here's a question from Carl. This is, I think, such a great question, and you're probably the best person to answer it. Can I ask Ernst why he thinks mainstream media in this country is so hell-bent on supporting the ANC? It really shocks me how not one of them have spoken out about how the USA is right on these issues. They haven't.
So, I mean, this is one of the big questions, because, I mean, what we've seen the past 2 weeks is the ANC might be weakened, but they still have a massive propaganda industrial complex at their disposal, a propaganda machine. And I've been at the receiving end of that propaganda machine, me and my colleagues at AfriForum, for the past 2 weeks. You have to experience it to believe it. I mean, you've experienced being public enemy number one, is also being targeted like that. But I think
the problem is, like, once they fail, you're not scared of them anymore.
Yeah. With all due respect to your audience, at the end of the day, you have, as I said, you have to experience it to really believe how outrageous it can become. So what's going on here? I mean, tonight I'm speaking on my show to Jonathan Witt, also a friend of your show, on particularly how the ANC propaganda machine functions. But at the end of the day, the only thing I can really put it down to is two causes, probable causes. On the one side, a lot of these people in the media are true believers. They genuinely believe the ANC. They believe in the NDR, the National Democratic Revolution. They actually are devotees.
But I think that's probably a small
portion. Yeah, it's not the majority. The majority are narcissists. The majority of them are virtue signaling their entitled or their enlightened opinion, showing that I am smart enough to see that this bill doesn't really threaten private property rights. The ANC are just doing this for the benefit of the whole country. I'm an enlightened person. I'm morally superior to these barbarians, AfriForum, these misinformation spread, these fake news spreaders. I mean, you can see the way they talk about Donald Trump as well, the most powerful man in the world. You don't get there by being an idiot.
Yeah,
but they talk about him like
and Elon. They say how stupid Elon is. I'm like, I had this conversation with someone on Monday on the show. I was like, you have to have some balls to go and say Elon Musk is stupid. Sure, you could say he's awkward and he's a bit weird and he's fathered all these children with different mothers. And there's all kinds of things you can criticize Elon about. Some of the things may even be very valid criticisms, but you don't want to call him stupid, because I don't think his track record would
My favorite joke in that regard is someone remarked once when Elon caught that rocket, like for the first time that's ever been done. He's like, Elon Musk, known simpleton, fumbles into yet another spectacular success.
But I mean, so much of what happens in South Africa could be Onion headlines, right?
Yeah.
Onion, the old one, now there are obviously better versions of that with, you know, some of the ones that I've seen in the last while are hilarious. But you guys, so you come in for a lot of criticism, and it must be very, very frustrating having to put out fires and combat what is in effect a range of lies which have been levied at you again and again and again. Do you think people are starting to get the picture, though? Because South Africans aren't stupid. Our government may be, but we're not.
Well, you can see it in the dropping ratings of all these mainstream media platforms. I mean, they are desperately clinging on to their status as the sole monopoly
on
truth.
And in the decline of numbers of people who are actually voting for the political parties.
No, nobody trusts them anymore. And at the same time, when it comes to these, a lot of these journalists just towing the party line, I mean, some of the things that they're saying, they might as well, when they're writing, they might as well keep the ANC letterhead that their instructions came with rather than trying to pass it off
as their own thoughts. Do you think it's that blatant?
I don't think in all these cases it's just the ANC, in all seriousness, I don't think it's the ANC directing them or pulling all the strings. I think it's a very much a decentralized process going on. It's much easier or much more socially and status lucrative to position yourself as the enlightened ones, the arbiters of truth against the, as I said, the stupid, uninformed, hateful AfriForum and all these Neanderthal Afrikaners.
And what about business in this country? Because they have been absolutely, undeniably cowardly over the last few years. The business in this country has done everything it could to hide its head in the sand and go along with government wherever possible. And I think it's partly because sometimes you have to do things in business just to keep going.
Yeah.
Though that is not an excuse for cowardice.
Well, in South Africa, this is not in all cases, but in South Africa, the line between corporates and states has blurred significantly.
Yeah.
I mean, most big corporates have some massive contracts with the state.
Normally they have someone on the board who is a directly ANC-appointed person who's there to manage good governance or, you know.
And if it's not that, they have to get
fiduciary responsibilities to the treasury rather than to the company.
Yeah, and I mean, if it's not that, you also have to get your licensing through the state. You have to get your all your checks.
Which, by the way, you guys have also. I had Russell and Pete here from Saakalicha the other day. They've been fighting very hard to try and stop this nonsense of like, why do you need a license to trade anywhere? No. I mean, unless you're trading in restricted goods like uranium, you shouldn't have to have a license. If I want to sell Flex or James a phone, I should be able to do that. It doesn't have to involve the government. Why do I need a license to sell them a phone? If they don't like the phone, they can come and speak to me about it afterwards. They'll probably get violent, but it's an unnecessary way for it to go. We can renegotiate the price, right, guys? But that's how it should work.
But I mean, at the same time as well, when it comes to particularly, again, the corporate media, you're speculating what's going on behind the scenes. I don't have some secret knowledge.
We don't know.
But at the same time, it was very eerie to see the software update go out, like Orange organization bad. Yeah. And then everyone just starts dogpiling on it, repeating the exact same like lines word for word.
Well, it's very Bell Pottinger-esque, right? It's like there's a directive issue.
Yeah.
And you can even see this in leftist media in America. Yeah. They all sing from the same hymn sheet when something happens. Mm. It's just absolutely incredible that people still think that's going to work.
And there's no dissenting voice among them.
In a post-2024 world, I'm afraid that those guys, they're going to be at the receiving end of just abuse and mockery eventually. Because when there are still 20 old people, because that's all that they've got really when it comes to like TV news, newspapers, News 24, the only people who are paying any attention to that are very, very old people who think that that's still the news. They haven't caught on yet because young people are smart enough to have a number of sources that they can rely on. And they just don't take those guys seriously at all. There's zero credibility.
I mean, that's why I always ask them when these wild claims are made about AfriForum, I always just ask, like, where did you get that? How do you know that? Did you bug AfriForum's phones? Do the South African intelligence community give you information? How do you know? I know they don't feed the media information because they're wrong about everything about what we say behind closed doors.
All right, so tell me this then: how long until Donald Trump sends an aircraft carrier to like take over the country? Because this is what some of these lunatics are seriously saying, right? Mm. They think that you guys are coordinating from within. First of all, I mean, amazing if you could actually get that sort of influence brought to bear. If you could get the President of the United States and the U.S. Congress this week, you've got to tell me what that letter means in a minute. If you could get those kind of people at that level to pay attention to little old South Africa. You must be very powerful people. Then I need to become a member tomorrow.
Well, I would love for you to become a member today. But at the end of the day, when it comes to a lot of these conspiracy theories, you're sometimes tempted not to want to correct them. You want to indulge a little bit in how powerful AfriForum is being framed. But I mean, at the same time, we do have a large impact through our international network of friends and allies. When we go overseas, we talk to very influential people and we tell them, as I said, we don't even have to give them any deep analysis. We just show them, here's what the South African government is saying.
Right.
Here's what the South African government is refusing or failing to do. Here are the realities on the ground in South Africa. We don't go there and say we have secret knowledge. We have some top secret files to share with you. Like, no, here's what's being blatantly seen by everyone with eyes to see. And the only people denying it are like the top of the top 1% in South Africa, posting pictures of their beautiful mountain views from their homes to show that everything is fine.
Does that not really piss you off, or do you just laugh at all?
I laugh it off because those people don't look very happy. Judging by their social media activity, they look quite miserable. So I don't really pay it too much.
So Mapelo makes a good point here, and then we will move on because I want to talk a little bit more about what's happened this week. He says, obviously, white people can't be the victims of anything, but blacks should always be. Do you think that's a part of it too? Is that the minute anyone in the world goes, wow, actually, you know, there isn't a genocide, but there's certainly a specified category of crime that's happening against a certain group of people.
Oh.
Certain group of people, as Donald Trump said the other day.
Very bad things.
Very bad things. And that there are laws being implemented against a certain group of people, which is the truth.
Yeah.
Do you think that there are communities in South Africa who are so used to getting the attention because they're the victim that they're actually like a child? It's a childish tantrum of like, no, but I'm the real victim. Mm. You can't be the victim.
I think it's, again, this comes down to also why there's this big attack from the comment class against AfriForum. Is I think it's because
what do you mean by the comment class?
The comment class are the people that get paid 100,000 rand a month to write two columns and and host the.
Tell me how to get that job. I'll write some better columns than them.
But anyway, what's happening here is again it's the dominance of that narrative that Afrikaners and the white minority in South Africa can't be victims of anything. Again, these are people that you're being told you're allowed to hate, you're allowed to be prejudiced about, you're allowed to stereotype, you're allowed to disregard any issue that they care deeply about. That's the narrative that we've been saturated with for so long. And then when there's actually issues being brought to light, the software that these people run on, the only thing they can do is downplay it and say, well, we have to understand it's the Afrikaners saying this. I mean, they can't really have any real issues. So when it comes to particularly the narratives that are put out there, and a lot of this also comes just from, as I said earlier, the top 1% that think that their privileged little friend group in Constantia and Cape Town is a sample size for everyone, every other white person in South Africa. But at the end of the day, I do think it's that narrative that,
I mean, it's just amazing to me that people would be posting pictures themselves on like wine farms and
on the beach
and be so self unaware. Yeah. That there could be someone who lives in a shack who looks at that and goes, why are you thumbing your nose at me?
Why are you laughing at just a simple statement like bad things are happening in South Africa?
But they mean it for Afrikaans white people.
Yeah.
But actually, they don't know how horrible they look to everyone, right?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, what's controversial about saying there's bad things happening in South Africa?
There are. There are bad things happening all over the world. And the fact that the American president, the most important person in the world, whether you like him or not, has noticed this, that's a problem to you. It's that he's noticed that it's a problem.
Because
you would have been fine for bad things to carry on. And let's stop lying to each other. You know bad things are going on. But it's that he noticed that you have a problem with.
Because that's what South Africa, especially the South African government, have been used to for decades. It's just the red carpet being rolled out for them. No criticism. And
like a pet being patted on the head. Yeah. Like, our government have been touring the globe for 30 years now, getting accolades for 1994.
Paragons of morality.
Some of which in the beginning certainly were well-deserved. We were in some ways a story that was worth telling all over the world. but certainly they've squandered any of that goodwill and political capital. And for the last 10 to 15 years, they've been scraping the bottom of the barrel of what other people in the world must think we are. They must see us coming and go, oh God, here they come with their begging bowl again. And now we've got to pretend that they're wonderful because of something happened 30 years ago. Yeah,
that's the reputation we have in Washington. One of my colleagues, Jaco Kleinans, when he attends meetings there, when they do their outreaches or their LAs and tours, people joke with him, say, oh, you're from South Africa. You're the guys that don't show up to the events. And he's talking about the South African government. That's the reputation we have as a government in Washington. Mm. You are the guys that don't show up to the meetings.
Okay, so this week there was this letter that I'm not sure if it's even a real thing.
Oh, it is real. I know.
Okay, so this has been sent out by, I think, 4 congressmen signed it. And it's pretty damning. The text I read anyway is like, this gangster regime in Pretoria.
Gangster ethno-nationalist gangsterism.
Okay, so tell me what the genesis of this is. Again, is this AfriForum that have given them the text of this letter and these Congress people are just your lambs that serve it up? What happened?
So these are members of the American Congress that a few days ago issued this letter demanding that South Africa be kicked out of AGOA, which is a trade agreement particularly pertaining to agricultural exports in South Africa, based on, again, the very bad things happening in South Africa. And they list all, people can go read it for themselves. It goes into detail, and it just proves one thing again. The Americans have eyes. They have ears. They can read.
They're allowed to notice.
They can read. The United States government has the most sophisticated intel gathering machine in the world. And you think that they can just be fooled by misinformation by reading a Facebook post? Or that's literally what a lot of journalists were insinuating. They're like, it's terrifying that the American president is being fooled by Facebook posts. I'm like, you live in a fantasy world.
Well, you're being fooled by News 24 and you're not embarrassed. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that at the end of the day, what are these bad things happening in South Africa? Firstly, there is the massive amount of just state failure, everything from crime, water, electricity, post office. I'm not even going to go into it. Your audience know, you know, I know. What are some of the other things that people might be a little bit less aware of, but still know? South Africa has 141 race laws on the books, 116 of which were pushed through after 1994. Mm-hmm. South Africa has a government that explicitly threatens that they want to expropriate property without compensation. A government whose officials still hail Robert Mugabe and ZANU-PF as heroes, as a government and a party to admire. Again, don't believe what I say. Research what I say. Go look up what they say in their own words. And then thirdly, it's a government that doesn't take the issues that affect minority groups in the country. They just write it off. They say, well, you have to understand you're a minority group. You don't get the same rights. I mean, that's literally a quote from Jacob Zuma a few years ago. The minority groups
So what about the people? And I'm trying to play devil's advocate here to be at least fair to people who will say, oh, it's just, you know, two guys who agree on stuff sitting here talking. So what about those people who criticize AfriForum and those in South Africa who are gung-ho about Trump's comments and who are going to say things like losing AGOA will damage our economy enormously.
Yeah.
I know AFGRI or AGRI-SA, one of these groups that have been set up to supposedly represent farmers. I don't know what their mandate is.
Read their comment section on Facebook.
Okay. That'll tell you whether the farmers
Give you an idea what the farmers think of them.
So these guys will say, oh no, but it's very damaging to particularly the agricultural community. So why would we want this? Shouldn't we just do what most people in corporate South Africa would do is put your head down, keep quiet, keep taking American money. Hopefully there'll be some good deals in it for us and our economy will grow. And then the rising tide will lift all boats.
At the end of the day, I mean, this is what AfriForum has been saying for as long as I can go back into the archives of what AfriForum has been saying when we talk to our contacts abroad. If South Africa is going to be punished by your government, the United States government or European governments or whatever, don't punish the citizens of the country. Punish the politicians that are pushing through these the destructive policies that are pushing this hateful rhetoric. The citizens of this country are already punished by the harebrained schemes and just destructive policies and extremist policies of the government. Don't give them a double punishment. That's always been our message. Don't kick us out of a Goa. That's going to hurt the normal people out there, not the guys driving Lamborghinis.
So you're saying then, categorically, are you telling me that AfriForum are not for ending a Goa?
No. Okay. We've never been.
Because there's also a lot of stuff in the news, well, in the media generally, about how that's your goal is to cripple South Africa.
Right. And that's why I always give that challenge. Show me where AfriForum said that is our goal.
Okay. So what about people who will say, and there are probably lots of them, okay, well, why don't you just fuck off? Why don't you Afrikaners who've got such a problem, now Trump is going to offer you refugee status. Mm. Why don't you just go?
Mm. Because I can just use myself as an anecdote. My family has been here since 1688. I'm the ninth generation of my family in South Africa. 1688 is before the United States was a country, the United States that is now putting pressure on South Africa. That's the story of the majority of Afrikaners that you'll meet. 11th, 10th, 9th generation. They have no ties or family ties to Europe or any other country. They are tied to South Africa. Their family has been here for generations. Blood, sweat, and tears, or everything. And to those people that say, why don't you just leave? There's a Moroccan saying that goes, my country is my country, even when I'm treated unfairly there. And that is the essence of it. I'm not attacking anyone that leaves. I'm not shaming anyone that leaves. Sure. That is a deeply personal decision that you make. I mean, there are people out there that have been victims of horrific crimes, people that have been turned down for the 20th job because they don't have the right skin color in this country. Those people have every right to want to leave. But at the same time, an organization like AfriForum is staying because our mission from the beginning has always been that there will always be Afrikaners in South Africa. There will be millions of Afrikaners next year, the year after that, the year after that in South Africa. Millions of Afrikaners that do not want to or cannot leave, and somebody has to represent them. Somebody has to build for a future for them. And AfriForum has taken up the mantle that we will be that organization. Doesn't mean that we write off the Afrikaner diaspora out there. They still have a massive role to play in regards to helping get the truth out there about what's happening in South Africa. But anyone that tells any Afrikaner, why don't you just leave, doesn't seem to have the same ties to South Africa or same tie or rootedness in South Africa as Afrikaners have. They seem to be exposing themselves as someone that a fair weather South African, that when things are going well, they'll stay in South Africa. But if they were to be, they are pretty much admitting if they were to be targeted in the same way that Afrikaners are, they would just up and leave. So I think that in the end of the day, it's about a culture having no other home. The question of whether Afrikaans, our language, is indigenous to South Africa. Anyone that says it's not indigenous, I want to ask them the question, what country is it indigenous to if it's not indigenous to South Africa? And that's why Afrikaners are so tied to this place, is because our culture was formed here, our language was formed here, and we have been here for many, many generations. And if we don't have a future here, our culture's future doesn't look very bright. I don't think there will be a lot of Afrikaners left if we all were to leave South Africa, because this is where, if we were a plant, this is the soil where that plant lives. It's like trying to plant a palm tree in Antarctica. It's not going to last long.
And Dilem Mahlangu says, farm murders are not only Afrikaners. Mm-hmm. Lots of people who work in farms are being killed all the time. That's a point to make.
Right, can I respond to that?
Yeah, of course.
That's why AfriForum includes in our farm murder statistics everyone murdered on farms, not just Afrikaner farmers, not just the farmers. Mm. A farm murder is not just a farmer being murdered. It's a murder on a farm.
Right.
So when it comes to particularly why there's this big focus on Afrikaners, also when we talk about this issue, it's because Afrikaners as a culture have a particularly strong connection to the work of being a farmer, the career of being a farmer, the agriculture sector. I mean, another synonym for Afrikaner is boer, which literally means the farmers. And as my colleague Dirk Herman always says, Afrikaners and farming are so closely linked that if you're an Afrikaner, you either live on a farm. If you don't live on a farm, you have family that live on a farm. If you don't have family that live on a farm, you have friends that live on a farm. So the issue of farm murders and any type of rhetoric from the government that says we are going to take farms, we are going to expropriate without compensation, alluding to farmland being the main target, that touches Afrikaners particularly deeply.
Because that's why you're allowed to be upset when someone says kill the Boer.
Yeah.
Because to you, that is a direct threat of imminent violence.
Yeah, but then Malema ensures that there's no misunderstanding. But he makes sure, he says, kill the Boer, but also kill the farmer, just for the English listeners out there.
No ambiguation.
Just okay. So, all right. I think that's something very, very important.
Ndi says an interesting thing here. Ndi says Afriforum might be a bit out of touch. South Africans are not voting ANC anymore. Look at the last elections. But all the more reason why this government has no right to, particularly since it's a government of national unity, and I have yet to see any of the others say anything sensible on this front either. But this government does not have a majority of South Africans behind it. It doesn't even have a majority of a minority of South Africans behind it.
But they still because get
in the last election, probably AfriForum could fill more stadia than the ANC did. But the point is that these guys are no longer able to go out there and say, I'm here as president of South Africa. I represent everyone in South Africa. You don't. You're a minority plurality party. Jesus. Yeah. Had to get the brain working properly this morning. So you don't have, and he's right. That's a good point. Yeah. Like, you don't have a mandate.
Just another reason why the average citizens of this country should not be punished by sanctions. The government should be punished. The politicians.
So, what does that look like to you? Does that mean, what do we go after if we're the US and now we decide, okay, you know what, AfriForum, they're very powerful and influential. We're going to just listen to everything they say. So, what would be the best case scenario for you guys, and what would be the worst case scenario for you?
Best case scenario is that South Africa is not kicked out of AGOA, or we don't get blanket sanctions that harm the average citizens of this country, but we get targeted sanctions that have a laser focus on those politicians pushing these policies. What would those sanctions look like? Well, firstly, I think this is very important for people to understand. This is going to be up to the discretion of the United States. I mean, we can make our suggestions. We can make suggestions, but at the same time,
they're certainly not listening to Ronald Lamola at the moment. So maybe they are listening.
You should send them a please call me.
Yeah.
When it comes to particularly what these sanctions look like, I mean, some examples would be travel restrictions, not inviting these South African politicians to all these luxury and the high profile events that the US hosts, that these events that they love attending, where they can be the belle of the ball, and also restrictions and on purchasing of luxury goods for these fat cats in government pushing these policies, and then also just the when it comes to particularly the international pressure. There's another element here that I think is very critical. Just the fact that the government is being criticized and being told we are keeping a hawk's eye, or maybe in this case an eagle eye, on you has a very particular psychological effect. So there was this the social experiment that I remember from a few years ago, where they put a bowl of money in the street and there's a sign that says take as much as you want, and within an hour all the money is gone. They put the bowl on the same street the next day, also a sign that says take as much as you want, but they put a massive poster on the wall of two eyes watching the bowl. At the end of the day, nobody took any of the money. The bowl was still full of money. So I think just the fact that Donald Trump said, you guys are on the radar, I'm watching you, I'm appointing people to investigate you, is going to have a massive positive effect in regards to making the ANC particularly careful and cautious about, and deflating them in regards to their confidence about pushing through these types of policies, acting on these policies.
We gotta end this. It feels like 10 minutes we've been talking, but I just want you, by way of a kind of outro here, to just tell a story about, and this is something you told me before, about how AfriForum has helped a huge number of black people in this country, even you know, the most strange thing, people won't be able to understand this. Again, it's going to glitch the software for some. Where you've got involved in court cases, expensive litigation, activities in the community, actually getting your hands dirty. And this hasn't just been for white Afrikaners, because you and by no means am I trying to throw this in as a last-ditch attempt to prove that AfriForum is or isn't anything. But you can tell the story yourself. Let people decide.
Yeah.
Tell them the story about this royal family in the Setswana royal family.
So this is the work of my colleague Barend Eis, who does has probably the most interesting job in the entire AfriForum, but the most unfortunate job in regards to it is the least reported on job in the media. So he sends out press statements just like we do with all our other issues, but he never gets coverage in the media because he is head of intercultural and intercommunity cooperation at AfriForum, the most anonymous section of the, if you were to believe the, if you look at how the media reports on it. So his job is building bridges and cooperation projects between different communities across cultural lines. One of these, I had the privilege of going with him. Long story, I'll keep it short. There's so many interesting details here. You can chat to him about the real details.
Get him on the show. Yeah. That sounds interesting.
So what we did there as AfriForum, there's the Barulong Buseleka tribe near Tabanchu in the Eastern Free State. And they had been pushed out of their right to the throne by the ANC and its lackeys and its loyalists. Long story on what's happening there. They were critical of the government, and then the government said, "Well, then we'll just replace you with some loyalists, but people that don't have any claim to the throne." So AfriForum went to support them and help them, and I went along on our first meeting, and it was a fascinating experience there, meeting the princess and all the elders there. And then they started talking about the oral history, how they remember the relationship between, they are the descendants of Chief Maroka. Mm-hmm. And they had a long history of interaction with the Boers going back all the way to the early 1800s. What happened in the 1836 is the Boers meet Chief Maroka, and they build an alliance. They build a good relationship. The Boers settle there alongside Chief Maroka. He gives them land where they can settle. They agree upon this, and they build a very strong alliance. And then later, there's the Battle of Vegkop, where the Matabeles attack the Boers, and the Boers, all their oxen are killed or stolen, and they can't get their ox wagons out of this precarious position. And they have wounded and dead there. They have to move, but they can't. They're stuck. So then Chief Maroka gets a message that this is the situation, and he sends them oxen to come get them out, and they travel back to Tabanchu where he sits on the throne. And the Boers build a church there in Tabanchu as almost like a celebration of this friendship and as a thank you. And in 2020, I think it's 2022, I'm speaking under correction, when me and Barend were there, we're sitting there, and the elders go through this oral history, every little detail. Mm-hmm. And then they say, and it's very fitting now that 200 years later, the descendants of the Boers are here in our midst to come repay the favor. Imagine that, a 200-year-old favor. And I mean, that just showed that South Africa...
Are they currently back in
we won
in
that their, court case, right? Yes. So you can go check it out. It's all on our website, the Barulong Buseleka tribe. Yeah.
Okay.
And it really just shows you that the South Africa that's
a difficult
out there,
one for people to spin, you know, this racist Afrikaans white organization that only cares about causing trouble with Donald Trump for South Africa.
There's just a different South Africa out there than the one you see on television and on the front page. But I mean, at the end of the day, those stories aren't reported. You didn't read about it.
Pete Seg says this is the I've Got Black Friends segment. I think it's a fascinating story. You know how much I love history. I can't get away from the opportunity.
South Africa has one of the most fascinating histories in the world. There's so many stories out there. And unfortunately, as we've discussed, a lot of that's just people are oblivious.
Yeah, you see, people also want to make history binary. Mm. And they want good guys and bad guys. And they don't want to think about it too much. And history is taught badly at schools, so people don't love it. And if we just understood each other a bit more, everything would make more sense.
On that note, I want to give your audience a little bit of homework. Go read or Google The Battle of Ghost Mountain by Barend Eis, the time the Boers fought for the Zulus.
For the Zulus.
Fascinating story. Go check it out. As I say, that's Barend's whole, he's like an encyclopedia of knowledge when it comes to
history.
Get him
on the show sometime.
You should absolutely. But I mean, that's the homework I'll give you.
Listen, thank you for coming to sit with us and talk about all of this. I hope that you have less social media headaches next week. But as you say, you know, maybe the eye of the international community on South Africa is not a bad thing. It'll force us to be accountable for ourselves as citizens and as a government and as a country. So I welcome it. I think it's great. And I think that it's also good that you guys are out there making a difference.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. And yeah, keep an eye on what the future may hold. We never know.
And next time I'll wear my two-tone khaki shirt.
I'll wear mine as well.
Promise. All right. Thanks, everybody. That's all we got time for this morning. We will be back on Friday at 6 a.m. And by the way, I'm going to be on The Morning Shot, which is a well-known podcast. It was started by Ramon Cabanac and his friend Byron Shepherd. They're no longer doing it together because Ramon was hired by John Steenhuisen and then they tried to fire him, but they couldn't. Stupid DA. And now he does it on his own, Byron. So that's lots of fun. I'm going to be joining him on his show, which will come out later this week. And we'll be back here on Friday with lots of fun and stupid stuff and some serious things. Big thank you to Caleb, who was on for the first hour, to Adamston in this last hour. And we will see you on Friday. Bye.
Dear God. The good news is that Alan, the homeopath, is on his way.
Is the girl in there?
Is that you, Alan?
Of course it's me.
What are you going to do, Alan?
What am I going to do? I'm a fucking homeopath, aren't I? I'm going to do it the natural way. That should do it.
Well, I must say, I'm very impressed. This homeopathy lark seems to have done the trick. I don't know much about it, but there's clearly a marked improvement.
You see, a lot of people, they look down their nose at homeopathy. They think it's a scam. But that's because they don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Well, it's clearly very effective.